19:30 UTC on Thursday, November 23rd, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
Oh, I was so joyful, I was so happy, just because I was waiting for this time to come. Ever since I was born and I grew, the only person whom I know was Robert Mugabe, the president.
That was Leonard Mutume, a shoe salesman on the streets of Harare. Good evening, I'm Kutsunai Matatwa.
And I'm Chidonjere on VOA's Zimbabwe Today.
Many Zimbabweans are asking, what's next for former President Robert Mugabe, who resigned Tuesday after 37 years in power? Very little is known, but VOA has confirmed that Mugabe rejected an offer of asylum from neighboring Zambia shortly before his resignation. Amos Chanda, the spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu, said the offer was made last Friday in Angola during a meeting of the Southern African Development Community Defense and Security Committee. Chanda told VOA reporter James Buddy that Lungu extended the offer to facilitate a smooth transition. Mugabe declined and said he did not think the standoff would get to that point. Chanda says Lungu backs the effort towards an amicable political settlement in Zimbabwe. He also added that Zambia gives the Zimbabwean army's assertion that its takeover is not a coup the benefit of the doubt.
Would like to welcome Gibbs Dubé from the VOA Zimbabwean service in studio to talk about the inauguration of Emmerson Mnangagwa as president on Friday. Welcome.
Oh, hi.
Can you break down what is going to happen tomorrow?
So tomorrow is the big day for Emmerson Mnangagwa. You know that he has been nominated by ZANU-PF to actually succeed, you know, the president. Or let me say, it's not a question of maybe succession. It's a question of taking that position by force. So meaning that they are using a certain provision of Zimbabwe's constitution called the sixth schedule to actually install him. So what happens is if ever the president dies or if the president is removed from power by force or whatsoever, like the case right now, so then the ruling ZANU-PF party has to choose a person that actually takes over. So they are given 90 days to actually do that. But then technically, since Mr. Mnangagwa was outside the country, he and then came back after he was sacked, which means that there was only one vice president, and that is Pelegezela Mpoko. So Mpoko was in a different camp from Mnangagwa's, you know. So Mr. Mpoko was in the so-called Generation 40. So the Generation 40, the faction of ZANU-PF has been pushed out. So meaning that he's the acting president right now. But ZANU-PF doesn't like that. So meaning that they've got their own person. They have to, you know, make sure that he gets that position as soon as possible. And so tomorrow they'll do that. And any person who becomes a president has to be sworn in by the Chief Justice or any senior judge.
Do you think Robert Mugabe is going to attend tomorrow?
Indications are that the former president is going to attend the function together with his wife. We don't know about his kids, but we are told that his kids may be in Botswana. But what is happening right now, maybe that is going down the spines of Zimbabweans in a chilling way, is the invasion of some property belonging to Generation 40 supporters. Those people that were actually baking President Robert, the First Lady, Grace Mugabe. So what is happening really is the incoming president has actually issued a statement saying that people should stop doing that, you know, the looting of property and all those kind of things. So when Mr. Mugabe calls for the inauguration, it could be sort of like a process of having knocked down his knees. So he's a person that is really sad, he's a man that is disappointed, maybe about himself, and the way some people around him were handling the political situation in Zimbabwe.
What do you think is the reaction now that Mr. Mugabe and his family have been granted immunity?
You know, this so-called granting of immunity appears to be something that is very speculative. So there is a constitutional provision which says that the president can be prosecuted if ever he leaves office. So this is section 98, is called presidential immunity. Let me read. subsection 1 and subsection 2. So subsection 1 says, while in office, the president is not liable to civil or criminal proceedings in any court for things done or omitted to be done in his or her personal capacity. And then subsection 2 says, civil or criminal proceedings may be instituted against the president for things done or omitted to be done before or she became president while he or she was president. You get that? So, meaning that at the end of the day, you know, some people can take this matter to court and say the president committed certain crimes. Now, you can actually take him to court. The military does not have any power to actually grant him immunity. So, I've heard a lot about this story, you know, circulating here and there, but, you know, the military does not have that kind of standing to actually grant immunity. So, the immunity thing, let's forget about it at the moment, according to lawyers that we have actually talked to as well.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Over his years in power, Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party increasingly limited the news media and any outlets for criticism of the government. Kudzai Zunaweshe in Harare has this report about whether there is hope for greater media freedom.
The wild cheers and car horns of Zimbabweans celebrating the end of Robert Mugabe's iron-fisted rule. After 37 years in power, the 93-year-old president resigned, giving into pressure from his party and Zimbabweans at large. Now the nation looks ahead. Wenzilesi Katuka is a young Zimbabwean and he is hopeful.
I think change begins in smaller steps. This is the first small step, but I think we'll get there sometime. This is the beginning of the future.
Mugabe's former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa is set to take over as president. He is one of the figures who helped Mugabe maintain a firm grip on power. Ben Frith is one of the white farmers who was displaced under Mugabe's controversial land grab in 2000.
I think most of us are really worried about Mnangagwa taking over as president. He has been responsible for the deaths of many, many people in this country. And so we are worried that it will be more of the same if he is able to take over and if he cements his power in the same way that he has kept Mugabe in power all these years.
One Zimbabwean, Charity Chirandu, says she has faith in Mnangagwa's rule.
Under Mnangagwa, I think Zimbabwe will be a better country. Not because we're getting rid of the system or changing the constitution like tomorrow morning, but I'm sure most countries will be willing to invest in Zimbabwe.
Just before his resignation, Parliament had begun the formal process of ousting Mugabe. Thousands of people gathered at an impeachment party and many took turns sharing what they want to see for the country, as well as for Mugabe and his wife, Grace. Gift Ostalos is the spokesperson of Tajamuka, a social movement that shut down the country last year while staging protests against government.
Robert Mugabe must be arrested. He must be arrested and face the crime that he committed. Grace Mugabe must be arrested. Today's young people were also calling for the immediate withdrawal of the PhD which was given to Grace Mugabe.
Many people say they want Mugabe arrested, hoping it will bring closure to Zimbabwe. Fritz explains some of the things Mugabe has done.
For there to be justice in terms of all the millions of dollars that he has stolen over the years, returned to the country, ultimately he should be tried for crimes against humanity. The terrible things that he has done over all these years constitute crimes against humanity, and he should be tried for the suffering that he's caused, because otherwise, if he is not, the world is setting a precedent for dictators to carry on likewise.
Many people are conflicted about Mugabe going to court. Some say his wife should also be tried, while others say he should go into exile. It is unclear if Mugabe had agreed to conditions for his resignation with the military and the ZANU-PF leaders, nor is it clear for how Mnangagwa will rule. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe in Harare.
Antonio Tajani was proposing today.
We are experiencing some technical difficulties. We'll have that clip from earlier tomorrow. Mugabe and many in his government often blame the collapse of Zimbabwe's economy on economic sanctions imposed by Western governments. But Ambassador Johnny Carson, the former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, says that blame is misplaced.
Everybody in the 1980s and the 1990s felt proud of what was happening in that country. After the land seizures of early 2000 and over the next two decades, he was responsible for bringing down the nation's economy and undermining the strong political institutions of democracy that had been a part of the country's early years.
What's more, Carson says the sanctions were designed to avoid hurting average Zimbabweans.
Well, the sanctions that were imposed upon Robert Mugabe and a number of people inside of the ZANU PF leadership were aimed at the key leaders, their families, and the companies that they control. They were designed to put pressure on the upper leadership to reform their democratic principles and to address the land seizure problems and to hold free and fair democratic elections. Okay. Those sanctions were not aimed at Zimbabwe as a nation. They were not aimed at the people of Zimbabwe. They were not comprehensive sanctions. They were not sanctions specific to one or another sector of the economy. And they did not, in fact, impede or block off U.S. trade with Zimbabwe. American companies are still allowed to trade with Zimbabwe, to invest in Zimbabwe, to work in Zimbabwe. And Zimbabwean companies are allowed to trade with the United States and to seek American private sector investment. There are only approximately 150, 160 individuals, their family members, and their entities on that sanctions list. This is a sanctions protocol aimed at the leaders who have undermined the country's democracy and undermined and driven into the ground the country's economy.
That was Ambassador Johnny Carson, now with the United States Institute of Peace. He spoke with VOA's Blessing Zulu earlier this week.
On the streets of Harare, business owners and traders are looking ahead. Philippa Mukumba owns a small business.
You know, with this new government which is coming, it's like the person who is coming was there before, and we don't know what he's thinking because of the previous things that he and the other ZANU people were doing. I don't know if those things are going to change or we are going for the worst.
Leonard Mutume is an informal trader who sells shoes, and he hopes this week's events lead to a bright future for his children.
Oh, I was so joyful, I was so happy, just because I was waiting for this time to come. Ever since I was born and I grew, the only person whom I know was Robert Mugabe, the president. So I was so happy to see him stepping down. It's an advantage to our economy, it's an advantage to our children, it's an advantage to us also to have employment.
Terence Mawera sells flags, and he says his business is booming. In the past few days, he sold 350 flags.
I think they've changed. Now we are happy, we are free to do our business. So our flags, both is our flag, our Zimbabwean flag. So we have to sell it. Everyone have to buy his flag for himself or herself.
but he questions whether the change in government will bring improvements to daily life.
Mnangagwa and the government before is that the same. So what the change? What another government? You know, MDC or another party? Was exactly the same. If I'm looking, we are going to struggle the same way. So I want to be something in Zimbabwe, which is better.
Those were comments from Harare business people, speaking with VOA Southern Africa correspondent Anita Powell. Young Zimbabweans are taking to social media as their country rapidly changes. Many want answers about how things will be different with the new government. One popular hashtag is the Zim we want, and here are a few of the comments. At WIPS Zim says, women should continue to demand accountability. The new dispensation presents a great opportunity to ensure that the government respects the Constitution and implements the gender equality provisions. At @Addy_TNS says, should have reasonable import changes and popular proper unleaded fuel. At Tambeni Diwa 07 says, free of corrupt police officers on our highway and roads. We have more than three decades of cold cases to be investigated. People who went missing. At Stephen Onowi says, Mnangagwa must make apologies for his tainted past and make good promises to the people of Zimbabwe, assuring them of the true democracy and great governance they never had.
I'm
The Saudi Arabian government arrested dozens of powerful princes and businessmen earlier this month in a crackdown on corruption. Many of these businessmen may have a role in the huge amount of Saudi investment in North and East Africa. Some regional experts warn that the arrests could threaten these investments. Mohammed El-Shinawi has the story.
Saudi Arabia has been encouraging companies to invest in Africa as a way to secure enough food supplies, farming on leased lands on the continent. The Middle Eastern country has little water, and only 1% of its land is suitable for farming. The solution has been Saudi investment abroad to produce rice, wheat, barley, corn, sugar, and animal resources. By some accounts, Ethiopia captured more of the investment than any other country. A major Saudi investor was Sheikh Mohammed Al-Amoudi, with companies in Africa, Saudi Arabia, and Europe. He is among more than 200 arrested in the corruption crackdown. Jamal Khashoggi, a prominent Saudi columnist and political commentator, says Al-Amoudi's arrest is related to the investigation into the agricultural initiative. He says it had become a source of corruption. He says the arrest of Al-Amoudi and other investors like Sheikh Saleh Kamel and Bakr bin Laden could harm many projects in Africa.
He has business in Morocco, Al-Amoudi. The Bin Laden have business in Egypt and as far as Malaysia and in Turkey. Sheikh Saleh has a huge business in Egypt, in Tunisia. So this investigation on corruption, it will involve further than what we know right now.
It isn't quite clear how damaging the crackdown will be. Michael Hudson, professor of international relations at Georgetown University, explains.
I think it depends on which investors and businessmen from Saudi Arabia are actually making these investments and whether they are regarded by the new power center, Mr. Mohammed bin Salman, as part of the corruption network that needs to be curbed. Or not. So I think probably business people that are connected in Morocco and North Africa with these Saudi investments are probably quite nervous as to whether the projects will continue and whether their employees will get paid.
To calm such fears, the governor of the Saudi Arabian Monetary Authority said that they froze the personal bank accounts of individuals in the crackdown, but not those of their companies. However, Christian Ulrichsen, a Middle East fellow at Rice University, insists that the arrest of so many Saudi businessmen who are active in investing in North and East Africa is sending the wrong message. He argues that it will be a daunting mission to separate their individual wealth from their company's capital.
Sometimes it's difficult to separate the two. And so what kind of process there is for defining an individual's wealth and how you distinguish that is going to be crucial, I think, to make sure that there is a separation and that people know exactly what is being done. Otherwise, it could just lead to all sorts of uncertainty, which will not reassure anyone.
Analysts say that an anti-corruption drive could provide a boost for the Saudi economy in the long run, but there are plenty of risks on the path being followed by the government. According to media reports, Saudi authorities are offering detained businessmen an opportunity to pay for their freedom. The Financial Times reported that the Saudi government has demanded up to 70% of the businessmen's wealth in return for their freedom. If that proves to be true, it might hurt not only Saudi investment in Africa, but also plans to encourage foreign investment in Saudi Arabia itself. There is much that remains unknown about the crackdown, including the charges that might be leveled at those arrested and the sentences that courts might hand down. Mohammed Al-Shinawi, VOA News, Washington.
That is it for us this evening on VOA Zimbabwe Today. I'm Kutunai Mutatwa.
And I'm Chidonjere. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Ndebele broadcast can be heard at 6 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7.com. Enjoy the music.
Thank you.